This episode of the Just a Mom podcast is the second in a two-part series with Kyle. If you haven't listened to the previous episode, please go back and listen to it before you start this one. Thanks again for listening to the Just a Mom podcast. Now here's the rest of my conversation with Kyle. My name is Susie. I have three children, the youngest of whom struggles with anxiety, depression, and suicidal ideation. I never thought this could happen to me, and I miss the signs. Being a parent is really hard, but I'm here to help. I'm talking to other parents and experts to help you with the struggles that your kids may face. I want you to know that you are not alone and there is hope.
Once see you smile again, take away that pain in them clouds that keep covering up the sun.
Junior year, you know, came back out, played lacrosse for a little bit, but then the kids, you know, as kids can be mean, word had got out somewhere, and, you know, they started looking at her like, you know, she's just got out of an insane asylum, and, you know, started making a lot of the talk behind her back, and the friend group that she was in before now all of a sudden isolated her, and she'd been gone for a while, you know. Now she came back and didn't fit in anywhere and was in this huge, you know, there's almost 3,000 student school and felt all alone. And went through another series of acute admissions later in the spring, dropped out of lacrosse because of that, you know, was still able to keep her schoolwork up. And then into the summer, going into her senior year, just did another long-term care facility. This was in Indiana.
Okay.
And the one in Indiana had a reputation of being almost like a military institution. It was very, very regimented, completely the opposite of the Wisconsin program. It had a lot of hardcore, violent type of patients who were there for legal reasons too, all minors. So Bridget really, you know, you couldn't step out of line. You just couldn't step out of line there. I think that was another wake up call and kind of what they needed at that time. Hmm. And then when their time was up there, we kind of changed our home environment. And, you know, part of the thing that I was talking about was that B would go through these great places, would feel safe, was able to express themselves, use the tools that they were taught, but then would come back home to the same environment that ended up contributing to this. And until we're able to change that environment, I wasn't expecting situation to change. And so we changed the environment, and that was the beginning of her, you know, she finished her senior year, graduated on time with honors. Then COVID hit.
Great.
Just tried a year up in Michigan State, and then her big, she also has social anxiety disorder, and, you know, which a lot of times go hand in hand with, you know, with depression. And her biggest fear was mass shooting. And sure enough, you know, we had a mass shooting up on campus. So that was enough with everything else, you know, with the COVID experience to where, you know, B just said, I'm going to put all of this on hold. She really enjoys working. And now she's, you know, working full time, making some money, saving up to go back to college, you know, on her terms, on her time when she's ready, and doing really, really well.
And that, I'm so glad to hear that, because, I mean, this has been a long journey for you, for B, for your other kids. I mean, just the years, the admissions, the suicide attempts, and I can't even wrap my brain around how difficult that has been for you and your other children too. Could you talk to us a little bit about how this journey has impacted your other kids?
Yeah, it definitely affects the whole family dynamic. There was some resentment from my younger ones that, a lot of their life had to be altered while I was, and their mom was, you know, running to various parts of the state or, you know, country to be with B, and couldn't devote as much time with them as, you know, we did with the two older ones. The same way, you know, and her younger sister is just 1 year younger than her, Kira, is extremely defensive and supportive of the family in general. Very, very vocal about that. And Kira was, you know, just like Bridget, just like B, you know, in field hockey and lacrosse, and of course at the same school. And so when B was away, Kira would be hearing all of this, and Kira would be very, very defensive and would go after, was not shy at all, and would go after, you know, the people, the kids that were saying, you know, derogatory, you know, things about, you know, her sister.
Yeah.
And, you know, would get into trouble at times with that. And Kira struggled herself too. You know, the same dynamic that was going on with B was the same dynamic that was going on for the whole family unit. And, you know, it's, you know, it's the environment that, you know, everybody was in that was contributing to the individual predisposition to, you know, to respond to this. So as, you know, we talked about earlier, each person, each kid responds to stress and responds to these things differently. And, you know, and all my kids did too. And, you know, Kira ended up with a lot of outpatient therapy. Finally, after 6 months, you know, I was able to, you know, finally convince her to, you know, start talking to someone, and she loved it. And she's still doing that to this day in a very healthy, almost like best friend relationship with, you know, with two of her, you know, mental health providers. A very healthy relationship, and it's really benefited from that. And then my two younger ones, they were really kind of too young to kind of really understand exactly what was going on, other than the fact that, you know, their two older sisters were hurting in one way or the other. And one was hurting in a way they couldn't really see because B was gone. And then Kira was hurting in a way that she was expressing everything externally, you know, and was even scary at times to the younger ones.
It makes me so sad and somewhat surprised that the kids at school were, you know, bullying her and bullying B and even Kira about B's mental health, because that's not been that long ago. It was a few years ago. And I feel like where we were in that time as a society, especially kids, that mental health was becoming far more accepted and talked about. So tell me how you feel about that and what you think about that and why the kids were so cruel at school.
Well, you know, I think this just probably, you know, is something as basic as brain maturity. You know, no matter how much society is aware of a problem and how we try and, you know, break down stigma that's happened over the years, you still have that growing brain of youth, you know, up until the mid-20s. You know, empathy really doesn't start to really truly kick in until, you know, your later, you know, teen years, you know. And sometimes each person's even different in that aspect. So it's not that big a surprise. I mean, we all know those very empathetic kids that really, they're the ones that, you know, coordinate support groups at a young age, sophomore, junior year, get really involved with special need kids and, you know, and all of that. But then, you know, they're really, you know, if you think of a bell curve, they're to the right. They're not the majority. I think the majority of the kids are just kind of in that growing, trying to finding out they don't want to be different. Yeah. And if that group mentality, you know, it's, you know, is like, well, that's, you know, if I pick on somebody, then they're not looking at me and my faults, and I'm not going to get picked on. So that's kind of focus on diverting the attention to somebody that we know has something different. And then that groupthink just kind of falls in on that. And so, if you know, and then you have to the other side where you just have some mean kids, you know, and depending on where they are within their peer groups, you know, you're going to be influenced one way or the other. Hopefully you'd like to see more of those, you know, those empathetic early empathizers, you know, influence more and more of the groupthink than the other side. But we're also at a time in our country to where, even though more awareness is out there, I think that empathy isn't quite as abundant as we'd like it.
Yeah, that's a good point. But also disappointing, you know, really just disappointing. And a big takeaway I would say is that in addition to talking early and often to our kids about their mental health, talking about empathy and empathizing with people who have whatever kind of struggle or issue, because guess what? We all do. We all have something that's not going well or that we struggle with. And that's really a good word, Kyle, just to emphasize that as we are raising kids. And yes, some of them are not mentally capable in terms of maturity wise, but if we talk about it a lot, that's surely going to make a little bit of a difference, I would think.
Yeah. And you know, the one thing that I've also found over these years is, you know, and it's really even as a physician, you know, it's, you know, when we, you know, talk to our patients to try and kind of get an understanding of what's going on, and even how I take that back to our family. And after being in many, many, you know, sessions with therapists, even my own, you know, talking about this, you know, talking is one thing and getting it off your chest. But then when you're on the other side and you're listening, you know, a lot of times we get in a habit of listening to where then we're framing how we're going to respond to what, you know, the person's saying to us. If we just, you know, change our thought process to where we listen to understand what they're going through, rather than to give an answer, I think that truly, you know, is validating to whoever it is that you're listening with and talking, having a conversation with. And a lot of times what our kids are saying or our patients are saying or our friends are saying or our family is saying doesn't require a response. It doesn't require an answer. It just requires, you know, just being there, you know, where they're at that time, being emotionally available.
That is so good. Listening not to give a response. That is just, that's gold right there. And, you know, you talked about earlier about being a fixer. And I think a lot of us as parents are fixers. I mean, you're an emergency room physician. People come to see you for you to fix them, right? I mean, critical care. You get the sickest of the sickest patients, and you want to fix them. And that's what people expect you to do, right? And people don't always want to be fixed when they come to talk to us, right?
Yeah, they just want to be heard and understood and to have somebody with them at that time in that space.
How has your experience of parenting a child with mental illness changed the way you practice medicine?
That's a good question. I've always, you know, we've known each other for a long time. I've always had a big soft heart, you know, and so I've always tried to be, you know, really empathetic, you know, with my patients and try and, you know, listen and try and help them through. I take care of patients at the worst times in their lives and try and help them through that and their families through that. This is, I think, just really, you know, given me more experiences to where I can empathize with them on a emotional level of going through something, you know, very painful, the threat, the true threat of potentially losing someone you love, how that feels, rather than just, you know, answering clinical questions and, you know, giving, you know, lip service or sympathy. You know, I can truly, you know, I sit down and I just try and get in the space, you know, the emotional space that they're in, the families, and listen. And I have, you know, become a better listener over the last decade because of, you know, and even the last 5 years, you know, because of, you know, because of this experience. Sure.
You also referenced having your own therapist, and I think that that is very important. I have my own therapist too. I think we often, as parents or family members, are so busy taking care of whoever's in crisis that we don't necessarily think about how it's affecting our own mental health or mental wellness. When did you start going to therapy?
I started going probably about 6 months after B started going through this, and there were a lot of things happening within the family unit that started to be, that I had really completely overlooked and was ignorant and in the true sense of the word over the years. And now it's just, it's all coming, was coming at me in these huge tidal waves. And I didn't know how to, you know, to deal with, I didn't know who to talk to, didn't know how to deal with it. So I just needed somebody who has dealt with this on a professional level, just so I could really kind of understand what was going on. For me, it was just an understanding to begin with. I didn't feel like I needed it. I mean, it was hard. It was hard. You know, it's, you know, I grew up in this typical Kansas farm mentality where if you're feeling bad, you know, just rub some dirt on it and go out in the sunshine and work a little bit harder and keep it to yourself and work it, work through it. And you don't have time to feel down because you got to, like, you know, get to work. And so that was, you know, it's, that's all we, that's kind of how I was brought up with that. And we didn't even question it. But it doesn't work a lot of times. It's, you know, hiding and suppressing those feelings and putting them down, especially when you're responsible for, you know, the emotions and the lives of, you know, so many other people when they're growing and going through this, that you have to be able to handle your emotions maturely in a healthy way. And ignoring them is not really a healthy way of doing that. I mean, it's one way. It's a, it is a coping mechanism, but it's not really a healthy one.
And it usually catches up in another way, shape, or form, and a lot of times not a pretty way.
Yeah, exactly. No, so I just started off, you know, purely out of, you know, a very clinical, I want to understand. And then as I started talking, it became more and more therapeutic. Mm. And then I started, you know, after doing it for about 6 months, and then it became more of, okay, rather than just knowing answers, you know, I'm there to, you know, talk and have that person just listen. Hmm.
What would you tell parents who have younger kids? What advice would you give those people about raising children and mental health based on what you've been through?
You know, each child is different. And I think that's something we get really reinforce as parents, just to know that each child is different, and to truly get to know, well, as best as you can, your children on an individual basis. So if you have more than one, try and have a lot of alone time with them, and don't be afraid to talk about, you know, some serious topics, especially when it's coming from a parent. You know, that's a safe, you know, rather, you know, if they have questions and when they become confident that they're not going to get scolded or they're going to get in trouble for bringing up some of these potentially off topic, you know, off limit topics, you know, get to the point to where, you know, that trust is there and have these conversations at any age, you know, that they bring, that they want to bring up, and, you know, listen to them. And if they're saying something that raises a red flag, even a little one. Try not to dismiss it because of their age. And, you know, I was guilty of that. I'm not sure how many others are guilty of that, but, you know, yeah, this can happen at all, you know, age, you know, the maturity of the brain is very fascinating. And we think we know it to some degree, but we're finding out things all the time. And yeah. If there's something at a young age that your child is saying that just, you know, doesn't make sense, don't just say, well, they saw that on Nickelodeon or something, or they're just repeating it, and now they're empathizing with, you know, a cartoon character or whatever. No, it actually may be deeper mm-hmm. than that. So, you know, the art of validation, I think, is also very, very helpful. And you can validate at any age group, you know, and kids definitely know it. They may not, they don't know the word, they don't really know how to express it. But if you're talking over them, if you're really not listening to what they're having to say, if you're not validating their feelings, you're blowing them off, you're saying you can't, oh, you really don't feel that way, this is how you're feeling. You know, I think we're all guilty of that in some way or the other throughout. I mean, many times, you know, the art of validation, you know, there are several books out there. I would recommend, you know, reading, you know, something just, you know, something small, even on the internet, on how to, you know, validate, you know, when communicating. I think that's very, very, very helpful.
That's really good. And I want to validate you, because when our kids were young, and now, yes, looking back, we can say, oh, shoulda, woulda, coulda, right? But the way we were raised, our generation, like you addressed, obviously impacted the way we raised our children or parented our children. And we did the best we could with the knowledge that we had at the time. Now, we know more now. You and I do. We know a lot more now than we did 20 years ago. And the reason I wanted to have you talk about that is so that a young parent, a parent of a younger child who might be hearing some of the things that you heard from me at 5 or 6 years old, or that, you know, behaviors that I saw in Will at 5 or 6 years old, might think, oh, this might not just be a little thing or a little phase, or like you said, you know, mimicking something they saw on TV. I need to press into this a little bit more, because this could be the sign of a much bigger issue. And it's never wrong to do that. It's never wrong to trust your instinct or your gut and talk to the person, the child, the loved one about, I'm seeing some things that I'd like to talk to you about, and I'm concerned about this. And it's always better to err on the side of getting help as opposed to not, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, absolutely. And also when they're, you know, when the person is going through a rough time and going through, you know, some difficulty, you know, rather than trying to come up with solutions, you know, like, you know, because like you said, as parents, we all try. I mean, there's various, you know, parenting strategies and different ways that, you know, we all address these in one way or the other. But a lot of the times, you know, we want to fix it. You know, we want to like immediately get in that mode. Well, as soon as you get into that mode right now, you're not really listening, you know, to understand what's they're going through. So, you know, I would say this is what I've been taught and what I learned and tried. You just lean into the uncomfort, you know, it's uncomfortable. And, you know, get in there, lean into it, feel that uncomfortable feeling with your child. Don't try and fix it. Be there with them. And a lot of times that's all they need. And they know how to address it. They know what to do. They just want to know they're not alone doing it.
Yeah.
A lot of times that comfort of just knowing that you're there and you're not trying to change them or fix them, or, you know, or give them, you know, old people answers to young people problems. You know, that's all they want. That's all they care about.
That's really good.
So I can't emphasize that enough.
I'm really happy to hear that B is doing so well now. And I'm also so happy that she came to you when she was struggling, because that's not always the case. And we want that to be the case, but like with Will, he went to a school counselor. He didn't come to us first. So you obviously did a really good job of making B feel safe in coming to you for help. And you have worked tirelessly for all these years, making thousands and thousands of phone calls. I'm sure being on hold with your insurance for who knows how many hours. But again, I just want to emphasize how important being persistent is when pursuing some kind of psychiatric care for your child or therapy. And hopefully, if listeners take some of the nuggets that you have shared today, if and when a listener's child is struggling, that child will come to the parent. And that's one of my hopes for this episode. Is there anything, Kyle, in closing that we have not talked about that you want to address?
No, I think just to reemphasize, as a parent, something that's helped me is if we're ever faced with this again, or hopefully never of some of your listeners out there, but if you know you are faced with something like this, really try and narrow down your timeline and your time frame to living day by day. And someone who's severely depressed and going through a lot, something that's just getting out of bed and doing self hygiene that we talk about all the time, combing your hair, brushing your teeth, that's a huge success. And so it's okay to celebrate those things. Even if that child was a 4.0 all-state athlete just 2 months ago, you know, they're going through a really difficult time now, to where that's a different person going through a different trial and tribulation. So as a parent, just, you know, be with them and celebrate these small successes. And, you know, expectations definitely change when hopefully nobody will ever deal with the potential, you know, a life-threatening experience of one of our kids who are suffering, or even family members who the suffering goes, you know, this far. But when they are, you know that every single breath is precious, and, you know, and enjoy that and cherish it, and, you know, and change expectations. Yeah.
That's so good, Kyle. Well, I cannot thank you enough for being willing to be so open and vulnerable and sharing your story with our listeners. And I have no doubt that it's going to help people and it's going to encourage people. You know, that there is a lot of hope that we can come out on the other side of a mental health crisis.
Yes. So there's a meme that goes around, I'm sure you've probably come across it, with Tom Hanks sitting with, you know, several other celebrities. And he has, you know, when you're dealing with really, really hard times, just think, this too shall pass. Even when you're dealing with great times, remember, this too shall pass. So no matter how bad things are that we're going through, remember, this too shall pass. This will help us get through these times. You will get through this. You will get through this. It's not going to be pretty. It's not going to be, you know, painless. Each time's going to be different, but you will get through this. And even when the good times are happening, you'll get through them. They're not going to last. Enjoy them. That's life.
That's really good. Well, Kyle, thank you again. I really appreciate you being on this episode of the Just a Mom podcast.
Thanks, Susie.
Thank you.
If you or someone you know is struggling with suicidal thoughts or ideation, please call the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline at 988.
Once see you smile again, take away that pain and them clouds that keep covering up the sun.